You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm joined by Brittany Spanos from Rolling Stone. Hey, Brittany.
Hey.
So we are momentarily, hopefully, going to be speaking to Ken Ehrlich and David Wilde, who respectively produce and write the Grammy Awards and have done so for many, many years. We're very excited to hopefully get a preview of this year's Grammys, which are coming on February 12th, and also, you know, look back. What are you looking forward to in this year's Grammys?
I mean, I love that they got both Adele and Beyonce, and I'm kind of hoping that...
Match? No, boxing match. She's pregnant.
Or performance together.
Okay, performance together. That would be awesome.
They've both publicly spoken about wanting to collaborate and being huge fans of each other, and I think that they're the big conversation about who's going to take home Album of the Year. And, I mean, there's really no contest in pretty much any of the categories that they're up against each other in, besides each other.
What about Bieber?
Well, I was happy that he got a nomination in. I was really happy that Purpose kind of snuck in there.
Sure. I mean, I sort of feel, for some reason, he's like mad. He got nominated for Album of the Year, but he's mad at the Grammys.
Yeah, he's not showing up.
Well, I think they'll tell us. From what I understand, they're still in the... Kanye's out. Drake's out, I think, but Bieber maybe is still in. But it's really unclear. Like, what's he mad about? Dude, you got nominated for Album of the Year, which for me, frankly, seems... touch of a stretch for me, because I think it's, you know, I don't know if it coheres as an album. I think there's good songs on it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So it's like generally Album of the Year implies that it coheres as an album. So I feel like when you, and this is someone who's complete, you know, who's obviously feels very strongly about sort of not perhaps getting the sort of establishment love.
Right.
You know, he has the love of the fans, but he doesn't feel like people respect him as an artist. So he got the Album of the Year nod. What does he want? Why does he show up? What's wrong? What's his problem?
Yeah.
You know, maybe we'll get to ask him about that. But I love the idea of Beyonce and Adele performing together, because, yeah, it's a total love fest. They're competing, but they love each other. So that would be really cool.
Yeah, they've both been, like, publicly huge fans of each other. And their most recent albums, they've both spoken pretty extensively about each other's work.
Right. You know, and then we'll find out why Dave Grohl is no longer part of the Tribe Called Quest tribute, because that was happening.
Yeah.
And it looks like, do we have them both on? Hey, Ken and David? Hello?
John, I'm not sure.
Hello.
Yeah? It sounds like we have you both.
No, I don't hear David. I hear Ken, so that makes two.
Okay.
If our math is still working.
He doesn't, Ken doesn't hear David, but I can hear both of you, so that's fine. Hopefully, I don't know how we can make it so Ken can hear David, but hopefully we can, our producer and engineer are listening. But anyway, we have you both. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure.
Ken, you've been producing the Grammys for, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, 37 years, something like that?
Yeah, this will be my 37th show. Yeah,
that is extremely impressive. And David, you've been writing the Grammys, I think, for 19 years. Is that correct?
16, if there's three that I didn't know about.
We'll bump it up for 45 years. You said yes. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Okay. Cool.
I know that as a recovering Rolling Stone journalist myself, you're just trying to make me seem older. But
I feel like people do that to me. Believe me. So I apologize. Okay, 16 years. Good enough. I would start by, we want to talk about this year's ceremony. You know, that first of all, we were talking before you went on it, you know, the big sort of showdown / love fest is between Beyonce and Adele, who are up against each other for so many categories. Is there any chance they might perform together?
You know, there are some things that we love to keep as surprises for viewers, and that's one of them. I can tell you that we're still discussing that.
Got it. But you know, we recommend that.
And Ken and I will be singing a duet.
Okay, good. Well, that's
we're gonna do Ness and Dormant.
Yes,
exactly.
That is what
kill
the
it, yeah.
That is what the world is waiting for.
You haven't heard
we,
it. So.
We literally kill it.
Yeah.
And presumably, and there's also a Prince tribute of some sort in the works. Rumor has it that Bruno Mars. But you know, more generally, when you and I think you've been asked about this. There's been so many. There were so many deaths last year, and so much to pay tribute to, but you don't want that to dominate the show. So how did you kind of deal with that dilemma?
You know, it's a fine line. And last year, this past show, which was actually, yes, last year, last February, there was this really pretty unfortunate period within the 5 or 6 week production period that we have to put the show together. It was Natalie Cole and Glenn Frey, Maurice White, Bowie died shortly before that. So it was probably partially due to the impact of these artists all together in that one short period. We wanted to be responsive to them all, so it was unusual that we did as many tributes and things on that show as we did. Ordinarily, prior to that, we certainly didn't. What's interesting is that the public really sparks to those. There's been research done on award shows in general that the most looked forward to segments of award shows, doesn't speak well for live artists, I guess, are these in memoriam segments. So they have become important. And obviously this year, you know, I'm never sure whether or not whether there are more the same or fewer. It just has probably more to do with this 24-hour news cycle as anything else. But yes, we do plan to deal with, you know, some significant passings this year.
And, you know, obviously I think you're not ready to reveal the nature of the Prince tribute, but when you're dealing with a prince, someone who I think both of you knew and work with pretty well. You know, first of all, there's the personal element. You want to live up to your own memory and association with them. And also, there's, you know, people are watching closely. They want you to live up to what a tribute to someone as important as Prince should be. So how do you grapple with all that?
Well, to address it does become very personal, especially with an artist like Prince, you know, because we did have some really great experiences with him on the Grammys and on other shows that we've done. First and foremost, you need to be true to yourself. Well, first and foremost, you need to be true to the artist. But that does play a role. And, you know, I think we learned last year, honestly, from the David Bowie segment with Gaga, there were people that absolutely loved that, and there were people that didn't love it.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, that we have to be mindful of the fact that we can't make everybody happy. We do the best we can.
But to your point, you know, I know how I observed how Prince felt about Ken and their connection, and I had a connection going back to my old journalist days. And one of the highlights of my life was we were at the Grammy office years ago, and he goes, "I'm going to go see Prince to go over this idea for him and Beyonce. You want to come?" Which was the easiest yes I ever, you know, gave. And we went over there and we had a talk. And I always loved him because I think he was the greatest genius of our times. Also, it's rare chance I was the tallest guy in the discussion.
Not by much, David. Come on.
When we discussed it, Prince actually said at the end of it, he goes, "You guys want to get a little private show?" And he literally had someone put out two chairs in the rehearsal hall and basically did a whole concert just for the two of us.
Not bad.
It was unbelievable.
And laid down the segment that he wanted to do with her.
Right.
It was pretty amazing.
Did he remember you from your Rolling Stone days, David?
Yes, he never forgot that, and he was always he always gave me. In fact, the absolute truth is, after he performed for us, he came up and he said, "I want you to sign a non-disclosure." And I said, "I'm sorry, Prince. You have to say that before you do the private show."
Fair enough. What happened with what? Why was Dave Grohl involved in the Tribe Called Quest tribute in the first place, and why is he now not involved in the Tribe Called Quest?
You know, simply put, he was never confirmed. We had been talking about it. It was never confirmed, and as it turns out, there are a couple of other things that we're talking about with him, and it. as we get closer to the show, you'll learn them.
Okay. So,
it didn't work out.
I feel like there's been a heavy burden on Dave Grohl in the past few years in the Grammys because he sometimes seems called upon to represent the entire genre of rock and roll. Is that unfair?
I think it's unfair. I think, you know, I mean, I think we did pretty well with AC/DC a couple of years ago.
I guess I'm not just talking about the Grammys. I think in general, he's been called upon. I think that's his he's kind of the he's the official representative of the rock and roll world and pop culture at the moment. So I'm not, well, I can't put that at you.
You know, in terms of popularity, I guess, not a really great word. There's probably a better word. The fact of the matter is, the Foos are a big act.
Yeah.
And to probably the broadest segment of the audience, they do represent rock. So, you know, and he's visible, and he's involved and engaged and
charming.
The kind of artist that we like working with.
And the weekend with Daft Punk, obviously a pre-existing collaboration. But what are you thinking visually and just presentation wise for that performance?
That's another one of those surprises. But I can tell you, it's stunning, and it's really, it is so. You know, it's both of them, but the reality is this is our third time around with Daft Punk. First time being with Kanye, the second time being with Pharrell a couple of years ago. They're very, I think I can use this word, they're very demanding, they're very specific,
yeah.
And creatively they're pretty amazing. So that this combination of them with Abel is potent, and both visually and musically, this is going to be, I think it's going to be one of the highlights of the show.
Being lucky to work with Ken, I will say I'm used to being in meetings thanks to him with some amazing people, but when you have meetings with the robots, it is especially surreal.
I mean, they don't have their helmets on in the meetings, right? I mean, come on.
No, they don't.
Okay.
As I said to David when they left, you know what? If we ever have a problem, all we have to do is just go around and back. Flip a switch.
Exactly. And I mean, this sounds like one of the, this collaboration between Alicia Keys and Maren Morris. How does something, you know, obviously you're not just shuffling cards and then it's like, okay, you know, like that's who came up, we're gonna try that. So how does, there's a certain element of I wouldn't say randomness, but there's a fun serendipity in that. So how does that particular pairing specifically come together, and then what's it like kind of negotiating between the two camps and making all that happen?
Honestly, that's the most fun that we have, particularly David and myself, because, you know, people ask us about these, quote, Grammy moments all the time. And the fact of the matter is, there are times that we generate them. And in the beginning, it was kind of all us because, the artists didn't know what we were expecting of them or the opportunities that they had to stretch. So now it kind of goes both ways. And in this one, to be very honest with you, they did this duet on a CMT show that they did, a Crossroads.
Got it.
And for whatever reason, it didn't make the show, and it was sent to me. I looked at it and I said, "This is magic." So we're doing it.
Well, to be fair, actually, Ken, my understanding is it's a song that, like, and this will often happen. Ken doesn't just. There are some shows where it's like, to get the big name, it's whatever they want to do. But Ken will listen to records, and from the moment the nominations come in, and literally sweat out what is the right moment. And it often, it's not the hit. And the song that they're doing is one that, if I remember correctly, Ken, it's one you really wanted too.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And had to fight for it in a certain way. So, but, you know, you mentioned the Grammy moments. I do a lot of shows. You know, Ken is, and Ken's been doing this a lot longer than I have, but I will say that when you watch all these sort of attempt to do these collaborations, he pioneered that from the moment he got to the Grammys. And I remember the first time I ever had any input at all was it was my wet dream as a Rolling Stone writer, because I grew up on Elvis Costello and I grew up on The Clash. And when Joe Strummer died, that was my, you know, relatively early on in my years, but he asked me to sort of sit in and try to figure out what we could do. And I literally at one point thought, We're sitting here discussing asking Bruce and Elvis to do London Calling, and Ken, you know, being really generous about this sort of thing, said, let's discuss who else should be in the band. And, like, I remember that vividly because, like, we were saying which bass player could do it, and I remember No Doubt was huge at that moment, and thinking, I think Tony has this sort of background and his sort of influences. And I remember, I've never seen any more grateful after they came off the stage. Like, Tony knew I had recommended him, and he said, "You just made my life." Like, because again, because we're all music geeks, and that's why the fact that this show is actually executive produced for almost four decades by the deepest music lover I know. I think that's what makes the show so special.
Yeah, and there is this. What do you want to kind of come away? How do you know that you've done the job you want to do at the end of the night?
I don't know how to answer that question, honestly. there is a feeling of satisfaction. I usually, melt into a chair at some point, I may not be my best critic, especially in the short afterglow. So I mean, I there is a measure that I actually have used at times, which is because I have no idea what people at home are thinking. Although now we do, because we can
look at
our computers and see it. But basically, it's about standing ovations in the house. Mm. And when we get once we've hit five or six out of 19 or 20 performances, I kind of think to myself, okay, this one's going pretty well.
So you're like Trump, you count the standing ovations.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay. You know. and the house was full. I mean, it was all the way back to the second.
And that's how Ken made the Grammys great again.
That's I was impressed that you fit 1.5 million people in Staples Center.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Rolling Stone Music Now. I have Brittany Spanos with me from Rolling Stone, and we are talking Grammys with the men behind the Grammys, Ken Ehrlich and David Wild. And we actually do have a caller. Wayne from North Carolina has a question. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys. Good listening to you today.
Thank you.
Wanted to ask about the rock categories, Beyonce being nominated in a rock category and deserving rock artist or not.
Cool. Well, we'll address that. Wayne, thanks so much for calling in. I would say, first of all, Ken and David, you guys don't do the nominations and awards. You do the show. Yeah. So, but we'll address that. I mean, Beyonce happened to make a great rock song with Jack White.
Yeah.
So, but what do you think, Brittany? I don't see the problem here.
I mean, I think that it is a really excellent rock song that was created. Samples a Led Zeppelin song. She worked with Jack White on it. It definitely has a lot of these like new blues undertones to it. And I mean, it's not abnormal for a pop artist to be nominated in the rock category. Janet Jackson actually got a nomination for her song Black Cat.
great point, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was either like 89 or 90 or something. It's not abnormal for an artist like Beyonce to get that nomination.
And also, Jack White, who is about as indisputable a rock artist as a rock artist can be, is on that song. Mm-hmm. So I just, but fair enough. Hopefully that addresses the question. Anyway,
I like that. Frankly, I love it when there's this cross-genre stuff, when it makes sense. There are times when it doesn't.
Right.
But I think in this case in particular, it's pretty authentic.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm pretty sure R&B and black artists had a little to do with rock and roll, if my memory serves.
Yeah, it's almost like there's nothing whatsoever anomalous about Beyonce or any black woman doing rock and roll, because it goes whack. In fact, Brittany wrote a wonderful piece reminding people of that history. Back to the show itself. So, guys, where are you with the show itself? What's the process like at this point? Are you rehearsing? Where's the writing at? Just take us through where you are and where you'll be for the next few days.
I'll let David address the writing. We basically start on the show in reality, serious thinking about it around September, when we can kind of begin to take a walk through the previous year and see what we think will be nominated, what might be nominated, maybe some cooler things that are not on anybody's radar, and we'll begin to compile a list, and I'll do a little bit of outreach. There's an actual Grammy rule, if rules are applicable in what we do, that we can't really make any offers for artists to perform on the show until after the nominations come out, which traditionally is the first week in December. So we that doesn't preclude us from talking, and there's some obvious choices that we'll start working with, and then the nominations come out, and that's when then David and I and others get a really good sense of what the palette is for the show, and it gives us an opportunity to look beyond the most popular kind of the what we call the big four, record, album, new artist, and song, and then begin to look at R&B, begin to look at country, begin to look at rock, begin to look at Latin, and start seeing if there are things in those categories that are worthy, or again, as we touched on before, maybe that gives us some hints as to some people we might want to pair up. And that's probably most of December, but it isn't, because on December 14th or 15th, the entire music industry leaves for Turks and Caicos or Hawaii. So the first week of January... Sorry?
Or Turks and Caicos.
And the first week in January, people begin to come back, and then, honestly, there are a lot of people who don't believe what we have to do here, but it's really a period. It's really a month. It's really 4 weeks from to where we can really seriously put the show together, and then the second week in February, it's on the air. So
where are you now?
Where are we now? We're February 3rd now.
Yeah, but I mean, what shape is the show in?
Rehearsals have not. We have a probably it may shift. I think it was about a week and a half ago, David, we really did the first rundown, where we did the sequencing of the show, the run of show. And that's really when it starts to leave the paper and turn into reality, because by that time, we should, although we don't always, kind of get a sense of what set designs, the artists are working on, that we're working on with them. Again, the sequence of the show, we begin to book presenters for the show. And then there's this dash to the finish from last week, probably the beginning of last week, until show date. Rehearsals start in all earnest next week. Most artists will come out early, especially if we're doing these collaborations, and we'll send them to a secret place where they can work with the other art. We try and get out there for those things so that we can kind of shepherd them. And then we have, it's an incredibly compressed rehearsal period. It's 3.5 days, starting Thursday afternoon until a dress rehearsal on Sunday, and then the show. There are 19 or 20 acts that parade through Staples off and on.
If I can vouch with my whatever journalistic credibility I have left, I am someone who's witnessed this on all the major award shows. I've done all of them. I don't think people quite have a sense what Ken and the team, what his, like, and when we say the team, it's like hundreds of, or 115 of the most incredible professionals, because I will tell you, no show is more challenging. Like, a lot of big shows that people talk about that I love working on, in essence, it's sometimes just sending actors out and showing film clips, or it's a few performances. But this show, the amount of physical production that goes on in a live setting, there's nothing quite like it. And with all that being true, and you're talking about literally what TV critics, and I was your Rolling Stone TV critic for years, and I'm here to say we didn't know shit about how it actually happens, because it literally can come down to what you physically can put, hang in the rafters and have the amount of pieces you can have. And all that being said, like the, 5 years ago, I guess it was, or 6 years ago, when Whitney Houston died the night before the show, I watched within a matter of seconds literally, you know, within moments, and Ken knew Whitney very well. I knew her only, you know, a bit. But within moments, that whole team was getting to work redoing a show. So it's an amazing amazing team effort that and with obviously Ken leading the way.
You know, talking about that for a second, yeah. David did a remarkable job because obviously there's an opening to that show and obviously then there's dialogue all the way through. And at that point, fortunately, LL Cool J, that was his first year hosting, was there. And we sat down and began to put things together. And over the course of that night, particularly David and LL just kind of went back and forth crafting. And at the end and basically it was Todd that came up with this line that I don't think anyone will ever forget, where he said the first thing out of his mouth was, "We've lost a member of our family."
Right.
And that kind of set the tone. And from then on, it was, and then he made this really delicate turn that David was instrumental in making, that talking about Whitney and talking about what she meant to all of us, and then basically, you know, taking the turn to, okay, but now it's time to do the Grammy Awards. Not as crudely as I just said it, but very, very eloquently.
One thing that's really different this year, you know, which we didn't touch on, is you've got James Corden. First time you've had a comedian and not a sort of a non-LL Cool J in a while. How is that affecting David? How is that affecting the writing of the show and the tone of the show and just the whole way it's going to come together?
Well, I went for the first meeting I was at with Ben, James' producer, and James, and we were, I think, all on the same page, you know, very, very quickly. And James, thankfully, it's not, you know, when you say a comedian host, the thing that I think makes James an inspired choice is music is central to who he is as a comedian and to who he is as a person. So that's what LL gave us, tremendous heart and credibility, and comes from a place of love with music. And James, even though it's obviously there'll be more comedy, it's the same sort of thing, where I think he's coming from a very genuine place. And it's been a different process. I was just there over at their offices yesterday. I think it's going to be great. I think we're both huge fans of James, and I think it's, you know, I think it's going to be a new energy. It's still going to be about the music. The show is about the music, and any time I think we get away from that, we're not fulfilling the mission of the show. It's, you know, I think that's what Ken has sort of done with the show. If you look at it historically, it's become so jam-packed for music, and it's happened at the exact time when the music industry was going through so many challenges that I always think of it as like an annual sort of like rallying cry for the place of music on TV, in the world. I think the show's only gotten more important during my 16 or 19 years, depending on which one of us is right.
in your 37 years,
in my 45 years.
Yeah. So we were talking a little bit about the writing of the show and putting it together. Brittany did some writing for the competition for the VMAs last year, and I'm just curious what Brittany would like to ask David about just the, you know, writing for the Grammys,
yeah,
and other award shows.
I came in for the sort of that final week of build up before the show, and so I know that it can get so hectic, and especially when you're working with so many artists and, you know, having to introduce so many performances and everything. Like, what does that final week leading up to the show look like for you, David?
Whoops, have we lost them? We might.
Is David?
Oh yeah. No, we almost lost you, David. But we're back. Were you able to hear all that?
I did. I heard
okay,
all
cool.
that.
Okay, go.
And I gave an eloquent answer.
I
really loved it. And I think I've
been in his 17th year.
Yes. In my 45th year, what I've learned is that last week is, my wife's joke is always like, why do you show up for those weeks beforehand? because everything changes. You know, presenters change. What they're doing changes. But the truth is, what Ken has taught me is you have to make it true to the moment. You have to respond to the moment. And, you know, there are great moments that you plan in advance, but a lot of times it's what happens the moment before. So you have to go to someone and say, listen, you know, Soy Bomb just danced with Bob Dylan, so we probably need to say something here. You need to be responsive. But, yeah, it's crazy, and you go back and forth, and I think a lot of times what makes it complicated is that you have to get both people, if there's two or three people presenting, they all have to get on the same page. But to the point of what you were saying about the competition, I do in no way consider the VMAs competition.
Yeah, I love how ambiguous that statement is. It's because you're such close friends with them. Yes.
Oh, no, I listen, I did the VMAs, and I remember... yeah, no, listen, those, I love the little shows.
Yeah. Speaking of,
they make this one look so much bigger.
So, speaking of the VMAs and speaking of the youth constituency, there's this odd little thing going on with Kanye and Drake, and for some reason Bieber. We're trying to figure out. Would you share your theory about Bieber, Brittany?
Well, I think the whole rumor is that Selena Gomez and The Weeknd are making their couple debut on the red carpet at the Grammys, and Bieber does not want to attend because. That will steal the show.
You know, that's great. I'm going to use that.
So I love Britney's theory I think there's a logic to that. But their argument is, and Frank Ocean as well, that they're claiming that the Grammys somehow don't represent, quote unquote, younger artists to the extent they would. And there's also, I think, a criticism that hip hop should be a larger part. And then this goes outside your purview. There's a feeling that hip hop needs to be represented more frequently in the album of the year winner, which again, not something you can do anything about. But so specifically, what do you make of this business from Drake and Kanye and purportedly Bieber and Frank Ocean?
Well, let's take them one at a time if we could.
Okay.
In terms of representation on the show, again, I can't speak to the categories and the nominations, but with regard to the show, we asked both Drake and Kanye and Bieber,
yeah,
basically, to participate and be a part of the show. So if they're concerned about the representation of hip-hop on the show, they need to respond and say, yeah, of course I want to do it. They've all done it in the past, and they've actually done really well. Without overstating it, I think we were very instrumental in the growth of Kanye West's career. You know, he did epic performances on our show, going back to Jesus Walks, going back to what was the one we did with
Gold Digger,
Mama. I mean, the year after year, he would come and do really great stuff. He's a wild card. That's the best. That's the only way I can say it. I love working with him. He's incredibly creative. He's really, and he always brings it. So. You know, I would love to see him. We know that he's had his problems this past year. We know that he had personal problems. We pursued him. We would love to have had him here. Same with Drake. But early on, before nominations came out or anything, Drake had already locked in his schedule to be in Europe. So, you know, there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, we're still talking to him, so I don't want to tip anything, but you know, he may or he may not be there.
I like Bernie's theory in part because we were talking before we started, Justin is nominated for Album of the Year. I really don't know what else he wants, I have to say.
Yeah, I don't get that.
And he gave an excellent performance last year.
Yeah,
too.
He was good. Brittany was saying he was actually very good last year.
The song last year that he's nominated for. Mm-hmm. I
have to say with Frank Ocean, and I love him as much as everyone, he seemed very uncomfortable in his Grammy performance, and I wonder whether that... Did you get any feedback from him about that performance?
Can I say something about that, Ken?
Yeah.
I will say that's an example. I usually like to have examples where I'm right, like in the Clash, Joe Strummer moment. But here's an example where I don't know as much about TV as Ken does, because he's defined what the Grammy moments are. And I remember very vividly, because I am a fan of Frank's, thinking, you know, and I'll be blunt, is that Frank had a very definite idea of exactly what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do it. And I will just say, I sat, as Ken said, that's not great TV. And what he's taught all of us who work with him say, will tell you, what he says is, we're not putting on a radio show. We're not putting on, we're not making a mixtape. We're making a, we're broadcasting on CBS to tens of millions of people, to the whole world, and you have to make it a TV moment. It has to not, and a musical moment that works on television. And he knew from the start that that was not one of those moments. And in that case, it's like, so, you know, some artists, I will say that having been around for 49 years on this show, what I have learned is the artist who will have the discussion with Ken at the very start and come to, you know, figure out an idea and then execute it, those always work. But when there are some people who don't want to come and play in a childlike sense and work with him, I will say that doesn't tend to go as well.
Do you ever try the, you know, hey, Prince collaborated with us, Prince listened to us a little bit. Does it, did you ever pull that out?
It, you know, it's all about being collaborative. And, you know, we there are times when, quite often, I mean, you know, it's a sliding scale of what it is that an artist, what an artist's vision is and what ours is. And more than nine times out of ten, 99 times out of 100, you know, that vision is shared and executed and, you know, is to some degree successful. I'm glad David said what he said. We didn't make it there. And we basically, because he was rigid, we executed his vision, knowing that it was faulty.
Yeah,
and we tried to tell him that. We tried to tell his management that. We tried to tell the record label that. So, you know, his lack of his feelings about the Grammys right now, I would imagine, probably go back to that in one way. But honestly, it wasn't us.
Sure, fair enough. Hey, so we have Noel from Pennsylvania has a suggestion for a performer, and I'm sort of dying to hear this. Hi, Noel.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good things.
I'm doing well. So we all know Adele's performing. She had the big hit album, 25. On that album, the song All I Ask was written by Bruno Mars, and I see he's also scheduled to perform. I think it would be amazing if you can get the two to duet and sing the song together.
By the way, I think it would be amazing too, but it's probably not going to happen, mainly because both of those artists are well committed to what they're going to do in the show. And, you know, I mean, we explore all kind of avenues. We actually had that thought at one point. But
that was Ken's, I will say, Ken, that was your initial thought for last year. So Ken is 1 year ahead of all of us.
Wow. See, Noel, you're thinking along
you're
the
right.
wrong way.
Noel,
you could do this for a living. Thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care, guys.
All right, bye-bye. All right. So, you know, I would, Ken, how did you get started in producing the Grammys? Like, what was the path that led you there?
Well, it's way too long, so I'll skip to the cut to the chase here. Early in my PBS days, we started a series called Soundstage. I was in Chicago, and it was kind of a seminal music series because it was before MTV. It was when there were three network TV stations and not much else. So there weren't a lot of outlets for artists to perform on television. And PBS at that time actually was appealing to little kids with Sesame Street and all the rest of the shows and Masterpiece Theater to an older audience, but no young audience. So we created the series, and the record labels goes back to the mid-70s, were happy to ship artists in who were cool to do a show that, you know, reached maybe 1.5 to 2 million people on PBS. But it was like Dylan came and did the show, Tom Waits came and did the show, Randy Newman did the show. It was the era of the singer-songwriters. We did some really great R&B acts. We did, and I started doing combinations then. Anyway, it caught the attention of some people out in California, where we are now, and I came out to do a very brief run on a series that went in the dumper, and had already decided I was going to stay, and then did the Midnight Special for a couple of years, and then basically started doing specials, and again, it led me to we'd done a number of specials and led me to the Grammys. My background, just for kids on the phone who want to do this, I was a journalism major at Ohio University and thought I wanted to be a sports writer until my mother said, you'll never make a living as a sports writer.
Good advice, good advice.
Go into PR, which is how I started.
and David, what was your leap from journalism to, and was there a kind of an overlap into the TV writing that you now do?
Well, weirdly, like the two people who changed my career path the most were Jan, who he might regret it now, but he gave me my dream of working at Rolling Stone. And then there was a Rolling Stone Fox TV special where they very wisely put me off camera doing a lot of the interviews. And that led me into TV because it led to writing jobs, including Ken Kong. We met at the opening of the Hard Rock Cafe, the opening of the House of Blues on Sunset, and which has now been torn down, basically. So that's how long
they're coming after us next, by the way.
Yes, until they tear us down. But that sort of led me into my life in TV.
Was that the special? Was that the one that had Springsteen doing Goes to Tom Joad and stuff, or am I thinking of a different one?
No, this was on Fox Television, and it was, I just remember being off camera interviewing Spielberg and Howard Stern, what happened was I made Spielberg laugh, and some producer said, can you come do this other show? Because if you can make Spielberg laugh, and then I ended up writing in a room with Bob Odenkirk and David Cross on a show, and I said, this is fun.
Wow. Wow, that's
David's remarkable. I have to tell you, it's the closest collaborative efforts that I've had over all these years. He's wonderful to work with. He's got an incredible temperament. He's a brilliant writer, and he gets to it. And the most fun we have is...
I wrote that. I just wrote what Ken said.
you're texting him things to say, yeah. Yeah.
I had to cut it and edit it a bit. But he's really something, and you know, the most fun we have is occasionally we'll sit in a room with other people and go back and forth as to what was on the other side of At the Hop, you know, it's those kind of things.
Oh, no, and the great thing about doing the show for 16 years with a guy who's been doing it for 37 is that there are things that I think, like all, like you two, like everyone at that Rolling Stone office, we think we know everything. And then by looking at like an old soundstage, I'll realize things like, there's a soundstage where they honored John Hammond and Dylan, and I guess Springsteen came in, and maybe, you know, all these other legends. Like I was watching in his office an old show a couple of years ago and discovered Chuck Jackson, who I had never really heard. And it's like, what's great is that I actually continue to learn from Ken, because, I mean, definitely on TV. I say this, you know, with all due respect, but I was Rolling Stone's, I'm still a contributing editor in good standing, but I was a TV critic for a few years, and I had no idea what goes into TV. And when people watch the Grammys or watch anything on TV, they always think, well, why didn't they, you know, I've often seen like when we did a Beatles, Grammy Beatles tribute a few years ago, like someone said, you guys made a huge mistake. You didn't ask what I think Clapton.
Yeah.
And it's, I always say, like, do you think, when we ask, the answer is always yes. And it's just like years ago, when I was music editor of Rolling Stone, someone called and said, you guys ripped me off. And I said, what did we rip off? I said, I wrote 6 months ago saying put Bruce Springsteen on the cover of Rolling Stone, and you put him on the cover, and I didn't write it. And I was like, and that was a point where Bruce Springsteen was on every other week.
Right. As opposed to now, where he's on every month.
Every week.
Just kidding.
Every week.
And believe me, every time I'm happy. But, and before we, if there's one thing that is unchallenged, it is my Bruce Springsteen fandom. I'm pretty comfortable in that. But before I let you guys go and we end the show, I was just going to get a little bit more into the James Corden factor. What are you learning? As you said, it's always an ongoing factor. What are you learning about him and his team's approach to comedy, and how it contrasts with the way you usually handle it? Like, what are you taking away from that? I know it's still in progress.
Good, David.
It's literally. Fortunately, we know we love him. We know we're fans, and it's just. The truth of the matter is we will learn over the next 2 weeks how to best make it all flow together, and how to it's really all about giving him the space to be himself, but also put it in a Grammy context. So that's from the first discussion with Ben Winston and and James, it was literally, they showed nothing but respect for Grammys and what they mean, and we showed nothing but respect for them. So we'll see if that respect survives the next week and a half when we're working around the clock. And I believe it will, because, you know, he's great, as LL was. And, you know, that's the truth, is that you're very aware, and I'm very aware, that we're part of this ongoing tradition. You know, it's like, you know, LL, Jon Stewart, you know, in just the time I started, Ken, this whole thing started for me when Ken called me on a Thursday night saying, you want to write for the Grammys? And I was like, this year's Grammys? Because it was 3 days later. And that's when Jon Stewart came in at the last second. So that's it's an ongoing journey, and it's an honor to be a part of it.
Totally. And in Grammy tradition, I'm going to play you guys off. Thank you so much for joining us. And that was Ken Ehrlich and David Wild. Be sure to watch the Grammys February 12th. And come to SiriusXM's Volume next Friday again at 1 p.m. and hear the next episode of Rolling Stone Music Now. And download our podcast at wherever you get your podcasts, or rollingstone.com/podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.